Dr. Wayne Ebelhar, Mississippi State.
Thank you, Wade. Well, we're going to move from India now to the southern U.S. We've been in Canada, we went to India, now we're going to move back to the southern U.S. I would like to take this opportunity to recognize the co-author on this, Dr. Normie Buring, who's located at the North Mississippi Research and Extension Center. The data that I will be presenting today, because this is located at both locations, will only be from the Stoneville location. This research, I would like to acknowledge both the Mississippi Corn Promotion Board and the Mississippi Corn Promotion Board. The corn and soybean guys have both been supporting this because it's a corn-soybean rotation. We're in a traditionally cotton area that has gone to grain crops over the last 10 years. Just to give you some of the background on why we're involved in this, a lot of buzzwords coming around on soil health, on soil quality. For somebody whose background is in soils, we used to call this soil tilth, and basically soil nutrition. But the soil quality is really defined as how well the soil does what it's intended to do. And it's also the capacity for a specific soil to function in its natural habitat, to sustain plant and animal productivity, to maintain and enhance water and air quality, and to support human health. That's the goal, whether you're in Canada, whether you're in India, whether you're in the U.S., whether you're in Europe. All of those things, our goals are the same. And both organic matter and soil biology are key components of this, and we've got people involved with all aspects of this type of research. You know, proper functioning soil is one that's high in soil quality, and this is determined by some type of a measurement. We want to be able to regulate water infiltration. We want to minimize runoff and try to get as much of that moisture into the soil profile so that we can replenish that soil profile. We want to be able to sustain plant life. We want to be able to filter any kind of pollutants that might come through the atmosphere, through the water. We want to be able to filter that as it goes through the soil. And then we want to be able to recycle our nutrients, basically N, P, and K, but also micronutrients and various other things. What is important? Soil structure. Soil structure is really key to be able to get good water infiltration in there. The more we work a soil, the more we destroy organic matter, and the more we destroy that structure within those soils. Soil aggregate stability is a measure of a soil's structure and how well it stays together. I'm not going to talk about this, but we do have a postdoc that's working on the soil aggregate stability along with several other things. The larger the aggregates, the more permeable that soil is, the better the infiltration is. But we want to be able to keep it in place. We don't want it to be moving out of the soil. And then tillage really has a lot to do with this. So this project is really involved from the tillage aspects of things. Our objectives here, there's not a lot of information available in Mississippi regarding cropping systems that involve corn and soybean. We were a state where cotton was king for years. Corn and soybeans, corn came back into the picture. Now, you don't think about it, but in Mississippi back in the 1930s, we had 4 million acres of corn. So it's really changed. It went down to none. As horses and mules went away, corn went away. As tractors came up, no more corn because we didn't need it for feedstocks. But we also, in this particular study, are interested in burning and not burning. We've got a lot of producers that want to burn residue. And the harder we work at it, the better we seem to be at getting them to stop those burning practices. Right now, we've been in a two-month no-burn quarantine, $5,000 fine if you get caught burning, because we're in the middle of a really big drought with a 50% chance of rain tomorrow. We've had 0.36 inches of rain since the 1st of September. So no-burn order works really good. But we're interested in soil quality, we're interested in crop residue management, and we're also interested in the economics of this. So all of this are all components of this. Now, this study is actually located at two locations. I'm located at the Delta Research and Extension Center, which is in the Mississippi Delta. This is an irrigated site. The other location is up in the North Mississippi R&E Center. That's up in Verona, Mississippi. That's non-irrigated. At my location in the Delta, we're looking at single-row corn and twin-row soybeans, so we can actually plant soybeans on either side of a row if it's in a no-till situation. Normie's working in a non-irrigated situation. He's working with both single-row corn and single-row soybeans. At the Delta station, the area has three basic soil types in there. Most of the area is a bosket, very fine sandy loam, and I would be remiss if I didn't at least put the soil taxonomic classification in there for the diehard soil scientist. Most of us don't know what that means, but at least it's there. The design is a split plot. The whole plots in this situation are actually burn versus no burn, and we're only burning corn residue. We don't burn soybean residue. Most of that is, there's nothing left in the field. Once the combines go through there, it's all ground up and put out. These plots are 102 centimeter or 40-inch rows, and they're about 100 feet long or 30.5. And again, the burn, no-burn systems. We're looking at four major tillage systems. A no-till system. Now, no-till in this is no-till during the growing season. We do, because we're on a bedded situation, we do bed. So we tried to see how long we could keep a bed, but in our sandy loam soils, that bed doesn't hold up very long. So no-till is really a minimum till system where we have to reshape the beds. We also have one where it's a bed and row with no subsoiling. The tradition in our area, because of hard pans and less than 0.5% organic matter, in some of these soils, we have a lot of problem with traffic pans, so subsoiling is required most years. So the bed and roll system, we shape the bed, roll it down, but we do not subsoil it. The next system is, it's double disc. This is more of our conventional system. Double disc, subsoil, bed and roll. Now, the subsoil bed and roll is a single pass. We do that one piece of equipment. The fourth treatment is that same piece of equipment with no disking. So we've got four basic systems here. Now, this is just gives you shows you an area where the field is located. You see in the bottom right-hand corner, we've got a little bit of tunica clay right down in this area. If you actually get into the field, because this field is landformed, it's not obvious that there's much clay in that corner. Now, this is the way the field sets up, that we've got six replications in the field. So each year we rotate between corn and soybeans in the section of the field. We do not analyze the corn and soybean together as part of this. It's a soybean test and a corn test is the way we manage this. Now, to get into some of the results, now, this particular study is involving both myself, Dr. Buring, and Dr. Billy Kingery at Mississippi State, who is a soil chemist, and his postdoc, Shankar, who is really doing the work on the biodiversity part of this. So we're keeping tracks of all operations, of ground cover, of bed heights. We take soil samples from every plot. We also take bulk density, aggregate stability. We're looking at emergence, stand uniformity, plant height and development, grain yield, bushel test weight, seed index, stover dry weight, and nutrient content. Now today, I'm going to talk about grain yield, because all of this other stuff, we've collected a tremendous amount of data, but it's also much, much more than we can ever cover in one tank. And being an applied person, the farmers want to know how it's going to help them. So to talk just a little bit about this. Now, I've got each year, I go in, and this is the corn data. This is from 2012. The corn yield, I've got it in a metric system. For those of us who can't think in metric, 1,000 kilos per hectare is about 16 bushels per acre. So statistically, if you look here, now burn, no burn, this is only corn. So these corn yields, there's actually no burn coming from this, because in 2011, this area was in soybeans. So there's nothing been burned. So you shouldn't expect there to be any differences here. And as you can see, there's not. But what's interesting, now this is 2012 data. No-till gave us the highest corn yields. Now you did see that the subsoil bed and roll or the one-pass system, there's no significant difference there. But the bed and roll system without subsoiling, now remember, we just started this test in 2011 with less tillage. So, but there was a significant yield reduction. Now, these yields are not very good from mice perspective. But if we look at the overall effects, this shows you this is actually averaged across the burn, no burn. You can see that there was a significantly higher difference between no-till and the one pass over the bed and roll system, and the conventional system was intermediate here. Of course, there wasn't any difference between the burn, no burn. If we go to, this is the soybean yields in the same area. Again, now in 2011, going into 2012, we did burn the corn residue. So if you look at the bed roll system here, there's actually a significantly lower yield where the corn was burned. Now, that may not happen many times, but it did happen this one particular year. Again, in this situation, if you look at the main effects, now there's no difference in soybeans, whether you use the no-till system, the conventional system, those yields are, when you average across the burn versus no burn, there was no difference. But you did see here that the burn was different when you looked across everything. Now, we do the same thing in 2015 and 13, 14, 15. So I'm going to skip a lot of that. This is 2015. Now, in 2015, the yields were much, much higher than what they were the year before. Now, you start asking, why is that possible? Well, one of the things, this is an irrigated study. In 2012, we're using surface water. Now, the availability of surface water depends on what happens with the water quality. Well, it just so happens that year they went in and sprayed the creek for alligator weed. The chemical they used to spray alligator weed, we couldn't put out irrigation water. We couldn't use that water. So that's part of the reason that there was a lower yield that year. So this is 2013. No difference in tillage. Much, much higher yield, but the tillage didn't have any effect. So if we look at the average across everything in the year before, now see that bed and roll, again, no subsoiling. But if you look at the average here, it's significantly lower than the conventional. See, both conventional and one pass had a subsoiling component to it. So without subsoiling, so we're seeing in this case with corn that subsoiling is making a difference there. Again, no difference in the burn, but now this was burned 2 years before. Remember, there's no burning in advance. So with soybeans, again, there's no differences in any of the tillage systems. I do have that same little component down at the bottom, that 1,000 kilos per hectare is 14.881 bushel of soybeans. So 2013, again, that bed row system. Now, last year, there wasn't any difference in 2012 on soybeans. This year, that bed row system, we actually saw a reduction in soybean yield. So, but no difference in burning. So now let's put all those years together. This is 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. It's all 5 years so far. These are the yields. Now, if you look across there, you notice one thing that's quite interesting. In the first year, the corn yields were the highest under no-till. The second year, they're the lowest. So that makes for a great way to figure out things. They're completely opposite based on differences in years. But we have seen that within those tillage systems, that 4 out of the 5 years, we've actually seen some differences due to those tillage systems as we've gone through here. So, and what I've done down at the bottom, looked at the 5-year average, because we're in the system here. So this is a 5-year average, and I've made the yields relative to what I call the conventional system. So if you'll notice that every one of these systems, at worst, were 95% of conventional. So if we start looking at the economics of some of these kind of things, you know, we may see that no-till system, from an economic standpoint, is not so bad. But remember, it's not true no-till. Now, let's do the same thing with soybeans. Only 1 year did we see any differences whatsoever statistically in any of the tillage systems here. And again, I've shown this relative. The worst we are is about 95% of the conventional yields here. Okay? So, in summary, we've seen that there are benefits from the changes in the tillage management, but they're not really evident over a short term, and they actually vary from year to year. A lot of that depends on rainfall, on irrigation, and moisture. The yields have varied from crop to crop. We've had some really good yields in this area, and some yields some years, like 2016, I actually had to take out two of the six replications because we had water standing. 18 inches of rainfall early in the season don't help a whole lot. But on the sandy soils, we've seen that, and a lot of data at Stonewall has shown that the need for need for the subsoil tillage. I think that was evident a couple of the years in here. It may not be true every year, but it has been shown there. Irrigation in itself poses problems compared to a non-irrigated environment. Sometimes, with the way this system is set up, if I don't have good drainage through the field, if I've got a no-till plot on the bottom end of the field, and I've got a tillage plot that I can't get water through and water stands, then that can confound the results there. So this is a multiple location with a lot of data. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. And also, I do appreciate your time and your attention. And if we've got time, Wade, I'll be happy to try to answer any questions. Well, okay. I didn't get off quick enough.
You said that subsoil is good. Maybe some years you have that advantage. Is there a way to predict that prior to? I mean, the amount of rain, the amount of irrigation, is that a factor? Or?
Okay, the question is, because we do see variations because of subsoiling, is there a way to possibly predict when or when it might not be effective? Maybe. One of the things that we've seen with a lot of work with irrigation and subsoiling, if you have irrigation, a lot of times, especially in something like cotton, not necessarily in corn, if you've got a shallow-rooted crop and you've got irrigation, you can get by without subsoiling because you can keep putting water in there. But if you've got a situation where you don't have much water, then you want to get the roots to be able to explore as far as they can. So being able to predict it, most of the time, because of the rainfall variation we have, you really can't. We might get 15 inches of rain in March. We might get zero. You just don't know. Mother Nature's like that. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.